like to make any comments on Bishop Wedgwood as a ritualist?
Yes, he was a wonderful ritualist. He seemed born to ritual. He had a gift for it in every smallest detail. He seemed to bring some extra embellishment or something that gave any service a little more point here or there. This, of course, was evident originally when he and Bishop Leadbeater were creating our liturgy. I remember sitting in at a great many sessions when they worked day in and day out, worked very hard together in this, on this task. He'd come every morning with certain bits he'd worked over in the night, at night or the previous evening. Bishop Leadbeater also sometimes himself had similar bits, and they'd put their heads together over this and that, and in this way produced the liturgy that we have. But the greater part of it was happily his rather than Bishop Leadbeater's work. The shorter form of the Eucharist bore more traces of Bishop Leadbeater's work, and that, in its original form at least, I think one can see, is less felicitous than some of the other parts of the liturgy. Bishop Wedgwood was a ritualist with a sense of style and a sense of the absolute fitness of things, which was unique in my experience. I don't think I can say any more on that point, really. Leadbeater, who for a man in his 70s had astonishing vitality, always retained his habit getting up very early, so about 6 o'clock every morning, but of course went to bed correspondingly early, generally about 8 o'clock or that sort of thing at night. Wedgwood was a man of a different temperament altogether, and he used to get up later, and it would take him time to get his energy, get his body going somehow or other, and then he would stay up later. They'd both arrive next morning to their tasks, perhaps sometime in the about 10 o'clock or something of that sort. Wedgwood would come along, very often with work he'd done the previous night. Leadbeater would have work he'd also have done, though this would have been more likely what he'd done early that morning, and they'd put these together. But as I say, it was mostly Wedgwood's work, and this we can regard as fortunate, I think. Wedgwood had a far better sense of style and ritual and all that was required for ceremonial.
Where then do you think Bishop Leadbeater's main contribution lay?
His main contribution was, as stated, in the science of the sacraments and the hidden side of things, of Christian festivals. He used to say what he perceived as really happening on spiritual planes, and talk about the necessity of giving adequate expression to all this on the in the actual ritual.
Now, these trial sessions, as it were, for the Eucharist took place in your home.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
One room was fitted up as a small oratory, and this remained fitted up, did it?
No. Our small home was terribly overcrowded, not with Leadbeater and three or four, and my family, and three or four or more other boys, and Dr. Mary Rock, most of the time, staying there. The place was fairly bursting at the seams, especially as there was also an office for where there was somebody typing and papers being filed and so on all the time. The oratory had to be fitted up anew each time. It was in the dining room, and the big oak sideboard we had was covered over and used as an altar. The greater part of the work on the liturgy, practically all of it, was done between the two bishops in Bishop Leadbeater's own room, in the house there. Yes.
Was it at this time that the arrangement of the seven jewels, representing the seven gifts of the Holy Spirit, or the seven rays, if you like, was worked out?
Oh yes, all that was worked out.
Bishop Wedgwood and Leadbeater were both entirely happy with this arrangement.
Oh yes.
Now, this work took place in what year? Between what months, do you remember?
Well, I would say this. I wouldn't be able to swear by at all, but I would think perhaps between 1916 and 19. These were the years when they were very active in these same matters. The liturgy was worked on with terrific intensity, and done perhaps in the earlier part of all this.
When you say worked on, it was not only the bishops who were involved, but your family and the guests, and who else?
Well, we didn't naturally do any work on producing the liturgy.
You informed the congregation.
Yes, quite.
And you were asked for your reactions, were you?
Oh no, nothing like that. No, it was worked out between these two. It was all worked out between them.
I see.
Yes. And various people from neighbours and people more distant used to come there. But very soon indeed, they got a small oratory in Sydney, in town. We lived across the bay, across the harbour from the main city centre, and very soon they got a place in town where mass was said, and vespers and benediction were done, and so on.
That was the forerunner of St. Albans Cathedral.
Yes.
Are there any interesting incidents that you remember during the working out of the liturgy? Anything that stands out?
Yes. My memory of the shorter form, the genesis of the shorter form, is that it came quite a bit later than the longer form. A lot of people had said the longer form was too long, and CWL sympathized with this view and was glad to have the opportunity to produce a shorter form at some period when he was more or less free of Bishop Wedgwood's influence, I think, wanted to make it more like what he called a mass of affirmation, in which the priest would affirm things as being true instead of asking for them to be done. A mass of affirmation in which what was affirmed or prayed for would be in accordance, more in accordance with what he was saying all the time. He saw happening as on the spiritual plane, as indicated, as written out in his book, The Science of the Sacrament. Thus, for example, he'd talk about channels for the outpouring and that sort of thing, and some of us felt made it altogether too mechanical a conception. Bishop Wedgwood, I'm quite certain, if he'd been there, would never have agreed with all that sort of thing. It made it too literalistic and insufficiently poetic.
Did Bishop Wedgwood later say anything about this? Did he ever give voice to any opposition to the shorter form?
I think he'd make jocularly critical remarks about the old man here in the shorter form, you know, and putting in these sluice gates and channels and God knows what. No. But I don't think he ever really opposed it.
He had no fundamental objection to a shorter form as such.
Oh no.
To the shortening of the Eucharist.
No, he didn't.
Perhaps to the words used.
Yes. I think a lot of people did feel, that it was becoming too much like an engineering project. There was a slight disagreement between Bishop Wedgwood and Bishop Leadbeater, about the vestments. Bishop Leadbeater used to, for example, want a terrific lot of gold braid in the main lines on a chasuble, or down the around the edges of the cope. And said these were important for the forces to flow on. Bishop Wedgwood was more concerned with the a traditional appearance, and though he agreed, yes, it's good to have some gold in it, his ideal of the vestment wasn't so heavily loaded with gold braid as Bishop Leadbeater. Bishop Leadbeater conceived all these things as, again, in line with what some of us thought was sort of an engineering project, you know, line wiring for a battery almost. Bishop Wedgwood wasn't quite agreed with this, but he wasn't quite so...
He didn't regard that as first important, overwhelmingly important.
No.
It collided with a sense of the aesthetic.
Quite. Yes. He thought some sense of the aesthetic and something that conformed more with the tradition of the church was important. On matters of church government, now there was a strong feeling, which I think both shared, that the less we had in the way of a written constitution, the better. Both bishops wanted to keep legalistic tendency out of it. Later, Bishop Irving Cooper, who was then Mr. Irving Cooper, came from America, and he wanted to tie things up more, but they didn't hold with... they didn't agree with this. I think perhaps there was some sort of difference in emphasis between what Bishop Leadbeater and Bishop Wedgwood wanted in this matter. I think Bishop Wedgwood would always have been more on the side of church tradition, and perhaps Bishop Leadbeater wanted to innovate and perhaps produce some slightly different kind of attitude. Perhaps it could have been more authoritarian, because he himself was really a bit authoritarian in his attitudes. The chief thing that I remember about it all is the tremendous sense of activity and enormous enthusiasm that was generated. This was undoubtedly due to Bishop Leadbeater. He was a man of tremendous vigour, very great vitality on every plane, and wherever he went, he roused people and enthused them, and there was a terrific stir of activity in all sorts of practical ways. I remember my mother, for example, was impounded and was very much in charge of producing suitable material for and making up vestments for everybody. Tremendous activity with all those women making and sewing vestments. Tremendous activity. And finding the suitable church. This was a great task, too. And finally, we found what was later called St. Albans Pro-Cathedral up near the railway station, a most beautiful church. And remember somebody asked Bishop Leadbeater, well, what colour are you going to have it? And without the slightest hesitation, he said primrose. And primrose it was. A lot of the music for the various rituals was written by Bishop Leadbeater. For example, I clearly remember him working out the Gloria, the whole of the Gloria, that was entirely his, and various other passages. And he adapted or chose the different Gregorian or other tones for different parts of the Mass. He took the lead in this very much, and Bishop Wedgwood agreed with him. I remember considerable discussion they had about whether to use English plain song or or Gregorian tones, what sort of music, you know, they would have. But I think that in this matter, Bishop Leadbeater took the lead.
Yes, that seems strange to me. One would have thought that Bishop Wedgwood, with his great musical background, would have taken the lead.
Yes, it is strange. I don't really understand it.
In later years, Bishop Wedgwood criticised the Gloria.
Yes, he was
unhappy with the Gloria as a piece of music.
Yes.
But at the time, apparently, from what you've said, they agreed completely. At least at that time, the music was the best or most suitable that they could write.
Yes, I think perhaps now and again Bishop Wedgwood would feel he'd have to give way to the old man, you know, and would agree to something as being the best that could be done at the time, you know. Bishop Wedgwood was essentially a diplomat where human relationships were concerned, in spite of his tendency to burst out from time to time with a forthright statement. Bishop Leadbeater had no sense of diplomacy. He was a sort of rugged individualist who spoke his mind in an absolutely forthright manner, and was definitely a bit, some people said he was domineering. He certainly would at times absolutely insist on having things the way he saw them. There's no doubt at all, absolutely no doubt, that the rituals and really the whole church was the joint product of these two men. Each of them had a major influence in the matter. Each of them was, it wasn't just a question of one dominating the other. Each of them was very fully represented in it all, except, as I said earlier, perhaps in the shorter form of the liturgy, which was much more Leadbeater. But otherwise they were both fully represented in the liturgy and in all the rules, you know, of how the church was to be run, and in the choice of vestments. They had their differing opinions, which came out perhaps as much over choice of vestments and perhaps sometimes over choice of hymns and music and so on. They had their different opinions in different ways, but and in some ways Bishop Wedgwood did remain critical of certain bits of Bishop Wedgwood's early works, but by and large they were in agreement. They were very, very, very much, very remarkably much in agreement. It was the work of the whole liberal Catholic Church, as we now know, it was the work of these two men, both these men together. And without these two men, we could never have had the Church as it is today. This is unquestionable. I would add that the harmony between them was very remarkable. They worked together in a spirit of cooperation that was truly remarkable. I've never seen such harmonious collaboration between two very different men on any plane, or even between men who were similar. It was a remarkably harmonious cooperation. In fact, this was one thing which perhaps more than almost anything else seemed to bespeak the inspiration of the Church. It seemed as though they were jointly inspired somehow or other. Otherwise, it was hard to imagine two such very different men being in such wonderful harmony and agreement. I think it's perfectly clear that both the bishops did have in mind the idea that the rituals were not merely for the sake of a few gathered together, but that they had a significance of a cosmic nature, that they involved the world as a whole and had meaning to creation as a whole. The second person of the Trinity is regarded as the creator and sustainer of it all, and his incarnation was reenacted in the Eucharist, and this had a meaning for creation as a whole. Yes, my impression certainly was that both the bishops thought that the Church would, in time, grow and become a very big organization or corpus. I never heard them talk about proselytizing from other branches of the Christian Church, but certainly they did think of it as something that would grow considerably. But at the same time, they would always be prepared to take in anybody who wanted to come from whatever source. The church doors were open to all who would approach our altars reverently, and that meant all.
In other words, there was a positive policy of expansion.
Oh yes, there was a positive policy of expansion. There's no doubt about this. It was meant to be open and to grow.